versus Morris. Mr. Hayes.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is John Hayes, and I represent Denard Morris, the defendant appellant in this matter. This is an appeal of Mr. Morris's conviction and sentencing for possession with intent to distribute 50 grams or more of cocaine-based crack. Mr. Morris's trial was plagued with numerous errors, and we respectfully request that this court overturn his conviction and enter a judgment of acquittal. There is insufficient evidence to convict Mr. Morris of possession of 50 or more grams of crack under Section 841B, as the government failed to prove that these substances were cocaine-based crack as opposed to another form of cocaine, and also failed to prove the weight of these substances. Consequently, Mr. Morris's conviction under the harsher penalties for crack cannot stand. In the alternative to a reversal of his conviction, Mr. Morris requests that this court vacate his sentence. The district court committed error when it relied solely on the PSI to impose a firearm sentencing enhancement, a fact the jury acquitted Mr. Morris of, and when it relied on insufficient evidence in sentencing Mr. Morris for possession of 50 grams or more of crack cocaine.
Of course, the law is quite clear that the fact that a jury acquits somebody on one charge merely means that it wasn't proven beyond a reasonable doubt. It's still open to the district court to find by preponderance that he possessed the weapon.
Correct. We are arguing that it is inherently unfair that when Mr. Morris was acquitted of this firearm possession, that the district court relied solely on the PSI in determining that he actually possesses firearm.
Well, but what's so unfair about it? I mean, the Supreme Court has said that that can be done, that the fact that there's an acquittal doesn't really make any difference, and there was a firearm. And it was in the bag, and Mr. Morris had possessed the bag.
Correct. And we agree that the Supreme Court has said that. I'd like to turn to our point that the government failed to prove that the substances at issue were actually cocaine-based crack. This court has held that the term cocaine-based under 21 U.S.C. 841...
What do you think
it was? Pardon me?
What do you think it was?
The substances?
Yeah.
Well, the government's expert did not give any clear evidence and at one point called it cocaine hydrochloride, which is both chemically and legally a completely different substance than cocaine-based crack or cocaine base at all. The government's expert did not present any scientific evidence as to whether these substances were crack or some other form of cocaine base. Initially, he said
But wait a minute. Although he does say cocaine hydrochloride at one point, the entire rest of his testimony is that chemically it is the base form of cocaine, and visually it's lumpy. I mean, it looks like crack, and other people call it crack also. That, in other cases at least, has been regarded as enough to prove that what we're dealing with is crack. I mean, of course, it's well established that there's no chemical difference between various forms of the base, but there is, as our opinions have said, a visual difference, and people know what they're dealing with.
Right. We're arguing that in...
That's why I asked you what you thought it was.
Yeah, especially when we're talking about Exhibit 3, which is where the expert called it cocaine hydrochloride, which is not the same.
That's not my question. My question is, what do you think it was?
I think it was either cocaine hydrochloride.
What's that?
That is cocaine powder, which is chemically different from cocaine base.
So it's not a powder, right?
I'm going by what the expert said at trial, which was...
I'm going by the expert, so you don't have any views of your own?
I didn't see the substances. I mean,
what are the lumpy forms of cocaine that are not crack?
Cocaine base itself could be lumpy.
What do you mean could be lumpy? What, if you add molasses to it or what?
I don't know.
I don't know, and not very helpful, right? So the only evidence is that it's crack.
There was no the testimony by the expert was not clear that it was crack. He referred to it as cocaine base, and then when the prosecutor asked if it was its street name was crack, that's when the expert responded yes.
Well, is the cocaine base sold in powder form? Is there a market for that?
I am not aware. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I thought it just was, I thought cocaine base was, although it could be a powder, I thought it was always, you know, cooked into crack. Is that false?
I mean, this court said that cocaine base is different from cocaine base crack.
That's not my question. Am I right that cocaine base is only sold as crack? It could be a powder, right? But is it sold as a powder or is it sold as...
Cocaine base is not a powder. Cocaine hydrochloride is a powder. And I know that cocaine base was originally sold...
What's cocaine base? It's not a powder, it's a what?
It is a substance. I'm not quite sure.
Substance?
I thought the record showed that it could be a paste form, that it could be in lumpy forms. I mean, the decision in Edwards talks about that. So there, the set of cocaine base that's crack isn't synonymous with all cocaine base. But what Judge Posner is asking is, out on the street, if you have an expert testifying that it is, in fact, the base form of cocaine, and you have both the expert and then all the other people calling it crack, labeling it crack, we have said that that's enough to say it's in that group of cocaine-based products that are crack, not paste or other kinds of exotic forms of the base. I mean, we would have to, I guess what you're asking is, whether you know it or not, is to overrule quite a bit of law in order to rule your way.
I don't think we're asking to overrule. I think the evidence presented, especially in regards to Exhibit 3, even if we go to the weight argument, that was not sufficiently proved to be cocaine-based crack. He called it cocaine hydrochloride, which is just not the same. And cocaine hydrochloride cannot be cocaine-based crack. And in regards to the other witnesses saying that they... thought it was crack or it appeared to be crack, the government didn't present any foundation or any evidence as to how they were experts.
But they don't need to. We've said that the people in the street who sell it know what they're selling.
Right, but the...
Well, I mean, you're arguing as though Daubert has to be applied. Maybe it should. I mean, maybe that would be a great rule, but thus far we have never said you have to have that kind of rigor for this.
I mean, even not if we look at Tremaine Peterson's testimony. The government only asked him one question, if you've seen crack before. He never asked, you know, do you deal it, do you use it? And the cases that the government relies on, as I point out in the brief, the witnesses there where they allowed the testimony that it was crack was that they were heavy users or dealers. The one individual was dealing crack for at least 2 years. There's no evidence or testimony at all that Mr. Peterson had that same level of knowledge as to what exactly this substance was.
What was Peterson's business?
Peterson said that he was a college student and that he was going back to college. I see him running into my rebuttal time.
How did he become a witness against your client?
He was in the van. His story is that he was picked up and was getting a ride to the mall to buy hats for school.
Well, wait. He was a criminal too, right?
He didn't...
He's in his mandatory minimum, right, to make a big...
Well, after he was arrested on this, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what was he facing his mandatory minimum for?
Mandatory minimum was 10 years.
What was the crime? What was his crime?
His crime, he was charged under count one, which was possession with intent to distribute 50 grams or more of cocaine-based crack.
Peterson.
Peterson, the cousin, yes.
So Peterson must know a lot about crack, right?
No, well, according to his testimony, was that he didn't know what was in the bag.
He's pleading guilty and being sentenced for being a crack dealer. And now you're saying he's not competent to testify what crack looks like?
I'm not saying he's not competent. I'm saying there was no evidence presented at trial that he was like these other individuals in the other cases who dealt for at least 2 years.
He's a crack dealer. He pleaded guilty to being a crack dealer. He's got to know what crack is like.
I argue that there was no evidence presented, and I just don't think
crack dealer. How can he be a crack dealer and not know what crack is?
being charged or accepting this plea agreement, I mean, I don't know what occurred. Peterson never said...
He pleads guilty to being a crack dealer. That implies knowledge of what crack is.
But how was the jury supposed to know that he had any knowledge? I really think that the testimony, there should have been evidence presented, at least as it was in these other cases, that he had some knowledge. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Mr. Hayes. Mr. Turgovich?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Robert Turgovich. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Indiana, and I represent the government in this case. I would like to talk about two issues. One is the allegation of improper vouching slash bolstering.
Yeah, well, I think that's a very serious issue. I mean, it's one thing to say that... you know, as in our Lefevre case, it's okay. You can say when you examine your witness that he's testifying pursuant to a plea agreement and he promised to tell the truth. But that seems to me to be it. And this notion that Peterson was facing a mandatory minimum, it's true in one sense, but could be very misleading. Facing a mandatory minimum sounds like sounds as if, well, he's going to get 10 years.
And at that point
in fact, it turns out that, you know, if he's a good boy, plays ball, maybe he'll get a break.
At the time that the argument took place, Your Honor, he was looking at 10 years.
But and that doesn't mean
that's
your statement.
That's not the issue. So you don't understand. He's looking at it in the sense that he is under, he could get the mandatory minimum. But it's not as if his minimum has been mandated already, so he's going to serve 10 years. He may serve much less, and he knew he might serve much less, right? He knew if he's a good boy, he might be rewarded by you.
Yeah, actually, Your Honor, his testimony is not
impression.
To that effect. His testimony was, when asked if he was expecting any leniency, his answer was that he was not.
What does expecting leniency mean?
Whether he was expecting any additional reduction other than what was in his plea agreement.
Additional reduction.
He did not know that, Your Honor.
Well, look, you have to be consistent about this, because in the statute itself, as you well know, 3553E, it says that upon motion of the government, the court has authority to go below a statutorily prescribed minimum. And you stand up there and make statements flatly inconsistent with this. I think it's very likely that he did know that there was some possibility this carrot was hanging out there, that maybe it wouldn't be 10 years. And for you to, as Judge Posner said, it's one thing to say there's a plea agreement, but it's another thing flatly to misrepresent the clearness of the statutory scheme and to say it's 10 years, 10 years means 10 years, and that's all there is to it, when the statute itself says otherwise.
The plea agreement required him, based on what he pled to receive the mandatory minimum sentence of 10 years. And certainly, I made the arguments that both of you have indicated, and the defense could have responded to those arguments. The reason the sentence ended up less than 10 years had to do with the equities that took place, in my view, as a result of the acquittal of Morris on the 924C charge. After that acquittal took place, Peterson was put in the position of having received, in my estimation, no benefit for his plea.
But that doesn't reach the point of the way you presented the 10 years to the jury. You made it sound like it was utterly out of anyone's hands, that the statute says 10 years means 10 years. You say he's looking at a mandatory minimum. Mandatory means common meaning, has to be imposed. A minimum means this is the lowest he can get, 10 years. That's reproduced on page 7 of the appellant's brief. And you have way overstated the situation. You knew that the government has the authority to make a motion.
the government was not obligated to make a motion and had not promised to make a motion.
That's not the point. That's not the point.
And the defendant had not been informed that the government was going to make a motion.
That's not responsive at all to the point I'm making. You had the option to make a motion. And as you just now said, as events unfolded, you came to the decision that it was an option you were going to exercise. Maybe you earlier didn't think you were going to, but it was a legal tool available to the government. So mandatory didn't mean common meaning mandatory. There was an out.
And clearly there was an out. But
and that's
also,
not what you told the jury.
Well, the defense had an opportunity to also discuss that point.
Does that mean you get to misrepresent things to the jury just because the defense might correct you?
I don't believe I misrepresented to the jury, Your Honor. At that point in time, it was my understanding that, and I understand, that other options would take place. But under the plea agreement, we did not bind ourselves. We did not even indicate we would file a 5K.
You could have said that. You could have said that.
Nobody's saying you were binding yourself to make this motion. The fact is, when you claimed that you had no ability to do anything, that was what was wrong. Now, the easier way to solve that problem is by what Judge Posner suggested, which is just not to get into it. You know, he's testifying under a plea agreement. He's promised to tell the truth. Those are factual statements. And not to get into all the, I can imagine why you might not want to explain to the jury all the intricacies of 10-year mandatory minimum, but we might make a motion under 3553 in the guidelines and blah, 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 blah. I mean, that would get, that would lose the point somehow, but...
As far as his bias goes, he understood he was receiving 10 years. And I think
receiving 10 years? I don't know what you're talking about. He wasn't receiving 10 years. He hadn't been sentenced yet.
But that's what he anticipated receiving, was
Who
10 years.
Who knows what he anticipated receiving?
But I believe there was testimony in the record that that's the sentence he anticipated receiving.
Realistic. He's not going to say anything on the stand that's going to undermine the government's case. That would be suicidal.
With all due respect, Your Honor, I've had many of cooperators say things that were not helpful to the government's case.
And wasn't helpful to them either when they got to be sentenced.
You look at the total picture of what they did and assess the value to the government's case. But in those cases, we mentioned 5K in the plea agreement and indicate that that's a possibility for the defendant to receive. And in this case, he was not told that he was going to receive a 5K. Any other questions, Your Honors?
I guess not. Okay, thank you, Mr. Turgovich. Mr. Hayes, how much time does he have? None. Well, you can have a minute if you have anything further. Okay, well, thank you very much. And we thank you for accepting the appointment and